The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And let's see, we are, I think we're all...
It's zoomed in and it's moving around now. It's pretty groovy.
Yeah, Kay is the pilot at the... Yeah, what do you want, Jennifer? Do you want to kind of see as broad as you can, the camera can go? Then we're all small, or do you want to choose the most beautiful person here to zoom in on? Which is hard to choose, which one?
It's Sophie's choice, that's right.
So.
It's nice, actually, what Kay is doing right now. I can wave to everybody. But turn to your left. The camera's actually over there. Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, that's great. And then it can just stay with the larger room like it is right now. And it kind of looks like a peach to Paul Gill. So that's fine.
So you can all hear her well? Its volume is good? A little bit?
I can be a little more forceful in my speech.
No, I just turned it up, and I can also put the mic on the computer because we get it through speakers more. So is this okay now? So if you need it louder, yes?
Do you want to make the COVID announcement now or later?
What?
The COVID announcement now or later?
Well, I was going to just talk a teeny bit today while we're here about COVID, and... So the question is, do we want to do it right now before you start, or should we do it this afternoon when we come back for lunch? Jennifer, can you help with it?
Do now?
Okay. So for April, IMC has begun to change the protocol, and it's really the only requirement right now is wearing a mask, N95 mask. But it seems like things are changing relatively quickly in the local culture. The Kaiser yesterday stopped mandating masks in the hospital. And apparently all hospitals in California have that choice now, and I don't know if it's national or not. So that's a huge step that the hospital has changed like that. The other is that I see people coming to IMC now, like on Wednesday. People all came dutifully, came appropriately with the mask. But then we had lunch outside, and then we came back in with the chairs and get their lunch. And then it was remarkable how many people did not put their mask on and stood there inside the building talking with one person having a mask, one person doesn't. And not even knowing they weren't wearing a mask, but it was a higher level of comfort. And if you go to stores in the Redwood City, you see very few masks now, so it just feels like at some point we have to kind of, as a society, are ready to live with whatever risk there is around COVID, and we have most people have been vaccinated around here or have had COVID, and it seems like overall these days people are not getting as sick as they used to be in the beginning. Where maybe the variant is different, maybe people have built up some immunity and something has shifted and changed. So I'm beginning to wonder about, for IMC, whether by May 1st we'll be ready to open up and not have masks, and have masks be optional. And that puts the onus on the people who are concerned, most vulnerable, to wear a mask. The N95 masks are pretty effective. Not completely, but they're pretty effective protection for people who wear them. So it's left to the people who come to decide what to do and what not to do. So that's kind of the thinking. And I wanted to tell you all, because it's going to impact this place for us as a group, that right now I could all say is we're thinking about it for IMC. But this would, if it's instituted on May 1st, and the next time we meet, IMC will have a different policy than we've had so far. And do we then follow that new policy? Do we treat ourselves as a special group that keeps the old policy? Do you have any strong opinions, concerns, worries? requirements that you want to say, so we, if it does change, are you okay with the change? Are you more than just okay? You're like eager for the change. What does this community feel about this topic? Yes. Let's use a mask, because then Jennifer and Vanessa can hear. Otherwise, they can't hear.
I would think it would be helpful at least to have some kind of extended like window for people to weigh in, because otherwise it seems like if you're immunocompromised, like, show yourself and like weigh in. Does that make sense?
You mean more warning?
Yeah. No. Like, can people email you or something? Because it's either right now or like never, it seems like. So.
Oh, you're welcome to email me. If you'd rather not say it here, you're welcome to bring it forth. For IMC, you know, there's... It hasn't really got out to IMC community much. I'll bring it up on August 16th. We have a community meeting and discuss it with the board and all that. So we're in process now. We have this month to kind of find a way. So you're welcome to let me know later what you feel about it and what impact it has for you. I think that one of the things that is unfortunate is that there's no decision. Even keeping the status quo, there's no decision that doesn't challenge someone or other that makes it difficult. And so how do we take care of everyone? It's always my concern. How do we take care of everyone? But so,
I would be elated.
Sorry?
I would be elated to be able to see everyone's faces and communicate without having to, like, really strain to hear. So.
Yeah, I agree. I was definitely a big proponent of wearing masks during the peak of COVID, but just about every organization that I've, even my university now, has said that they've taken away masks. The situation has changed so profoundly in terms of medication and the ability to, and from what I've seen of this group, folks are really very diligent about having symptoms, taking tests, not coming. And I think Sheree's the latest example of someone who said, you know, I'm really not sure, let me take this test, and then I'll determine whether I'd show up to the group. That makes me feel a lot more comfortable about being able to eliminate the masks.
Great.
And I would like to see everyone's face.
Yes.
I have some people in my life who are navigating this in their workplaces, including folks who, feel like they really need that protection. And one thing that a person that I know does at work is when they have a meeting at work, everyone sort of like votes in the moment for like what they need, mm-hmm. and sort of based on what is shown there, the whole group kind of makes a decision whether or not to wear masks together. And so, I don't know. I'm just saying that out loud because I agree that, totally, it feels nice to not have to wear masks. And I also wonder if there could be some, I'd like to like think a little more and like have some time to get in touch about it. Especially since folks may or may not have agreed to come to this program like thinking that we'd do masking the whole time, and I don't know how accessible or inaccessible it'll feel to folks to come if folks aren't masking.
This is why I bring it up, to find out what's happening here with everyone. And thank you. Yeah. So one possibility. I'm not proposing it yet, but certainly a possibility is that we come next time masked. And then we check in and see what's going on. If four of you have been exposed to COVID in the last few days, maybe we just then decide, let's keep masks. But if everyone is, no one's been exposed at all, maybe we have a different feeling. So just checking in, making sure there's a check and balance system, that's one option. And so a couple of things, one thing to keep in mind, you know, is that we actually didn't turn on, I don't think we've turned on all the air purifiers. Are they on? Most of them are on. So we have all these air purifiers in the room. We also have fresh air coming into the room constantly from I think it's coming in. If not, I'll check. But it's supposed to be coming in here. So, and then also by May, it might be warm enough, we can keep the doors open a little bit. That door especially doesn't get, this door gets kind of loud. So all that adds layers of protection as well. And also it's possible that in May we feel comfortable with doing some of our sessions outside in the parking lot. It might work, just to kind of limit it to here. So there's all kinds of possibilities. So thank you. So those of you who feel like you'd like to communicate with me later about it, please feel free to email me and let me know. Slack me, whatever, what you'd like to do. And then once I know what the IMC is doing, I think that has some relevance, so that I'll inform you a decision there is what has been made. And that might have some influence on what happens here. Yes? Yeah, because then they can hear us on Zoom.
Just a follow-up and qualifying question, are we just concerned about COVID or all respiratory-borne diseases? So like the flu or things like that, or what, are we expanding the sensitivity or the masks to include all of those? I only say that because California repealed the mandate hospitals have to have masks. The state of California did, but then they leave it to each county, and each hospital can then determine their own policy. So like Santa Clara, when cold season's coming by, they're going to require all masks in hospitals.
Great.
Yeah, but sure. I'm just asking, for like, what kind of sensitivity are we... Yeah.
Well, I think my hope is that one of the consequences of this, all this mask wearing we've done, it's become second nature now. If someone has a cold or a flu, in the past they would have gone into public and not be concerned about it because they didn't want to look strange or something. But now if we have to be in public like we would have been before, that we would now wear masks if we have any kind of contagious cold or something. That it's just what we do now. That's pretty much the case in Japan. That was before the pandemic. So now I think we're catching up on that. So certainly coming here, if you just had a cold or have a light cold, or and that's kind of, some people just, that's, they don't think too much about it. But now we would come and wear a mask. Okay, so thank you. So Jennifer, now it's your turn.
Actually, I'm gonna pass the ball to Vanessa real quick. You ready, Vanessa? Because it's our intention to read aloud the group agreements on a regular basis. So I thought now would be a good time and Vanessa, we can bring your voice in if you would read through for us and help us bring them to mind and remind us if we stepped away from them a little bit.
This isn't the first time that we're reading them, is it?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, my group agreements. Agreement one, try it on. You are invited to try on new ideas or ways of doing things that might not be what you prefer or are familiar with. Number two, practice self-focus. Practice speaking about your own experiences and refraining from speaking for a whole group or expressing assumptions about the experiences of others. Three, understand the difference between intent and impact. Learning our good intentions in speech and behavior can land with a negative impact for someone else. Denying the impact of something by focusing on intent is often more destructive than the initial interaction. Practice both, and when speaking, substitute and for but. This practice acknowledges and honors multiple realities. Refrain from blaming or shaming self and others. Practice giving skillful feedback. Next one is move up, move back. Encourage full participation by all present. Take note of who is speaking and who is not. If you tend to speak often, consider moving back and vice versa. Practice mindful listening. Try to avoid planning what you'll say as you listen to others. Be willing to be surprised, to learn something new. Listen with your whole self. Confidentiality. Take home learnings, but don't identify anyone other than yourself, now or later. If you want to follow up with anyone regarding something they said in this session, ask first and respect their wishes. Finally, the right to pass. You can say, "I pass," if you do not wish to speak up.
Thank you, Vanessa. The light blue square on the right of Vanessa's screen is France. He's in the La France. Voila.
It's
It's very blue, very pretty. So, it's great to be with you all in this format, as compared to not at all. I'm sitting in a chair for our time together, and I think it's going to be okay. This is a short time. I'm going to give a presentation to you now on the uses of truth in chaplaincy. So, with the foundation that Gail and Paul have laid out, the reflection that you've been doing, I think it's possible to really be specific on what ways is truth relevant to the practice of caring for others? In what ways is truth needed for those in our care? And what the many different what that can look like depending on X, Y, and Z. So I think I'd like to hear from you first. And ask you to pick up the mic. I don't need to see you. But can you think about if there's been a situation and the truth is relevant in being with other people in this course, with the people you're caring for, or with the staff or leadership or peers in the context in which you're providing some spiritual care? How has truth arisen? You could even look at our conversation about masks from a few minutes ago, the truth of the state of the pandemic, what's true for different people, as we just heard from different points of view about the situation, people's intending to themselves as well as others. So that's an example right there. It's a changing truth, but it's what I would call a use of truth in chaplaincy. So a few people can grab the mics and just give me some popcorn examples. You don't need a long story, but just something about as brief as what I just said about what we just did here. Thank you.
Something that has come up a lot in the night ministry work is people wondering, like, who are you? Like, why are you here and what are you doing? Because there's not necessarily a context for my presence and for the interaction. So people seeking seeking a truth of who I am and like, what my motivation is, who I'm affiliated with.
That makes sense. Thank you.
What's come up for me since I've been doing my volunteer work and also frequently used to come up when I was a hospice nurse is working with people with some cognitive decline. And, you know, so how to answer them when they ask a question that they're going to then forget the answer quickly. You know, how truthful to be. You know, I was telling Alan once a story about this woman, and I didn't realize because I was just the nurse on call, and I went out, and her husband had died, and, you know, it was really obvious he was dead, which isn't always obvious, but he was dead from the minute I opened the door. But she didn't understand that. And then, you know, so I realized, and I didn't know her and her abilities. So then she kept asking me what's wrong with him. And then, you know, I soon realized that telling her he had died was not a good answer. But then I struggle with, you know, what do you say? Yeah, and Gil was very helpful in my paper last time with that.
Okay, a simple example from my hospice work that comes up a lot is when I enter a patient's home, there's a lot of expectations from the organization that I work for about what the interaction should be about. And one practice for me is recognizing the truth of what actually needs to happen in the room and what would actually benefit the person, and sort of being mindful and wise about that pull organizationally, and attending to what is really needed.
These are great examples, thank you. It's enough for me to keep going unless somebody is lunging for the microphone. I can't tell. No? Okay, great. So I have a little list here, and I always do points to make, and a couple of them have already been brought up, so let me state those and start with those. One is kind of claiming your seat and your place in the room. And doing that for others as well. So I appreciate that sort of kind of got started off with pay. And it's related to another one, which is attending to and naming what's happening. You know, so not only does the person want to know who I am, but to acknowledge, like, yeah, I'm a stranger. Mm-hmm. I'm a stranger to you. And it's surprisingly helpful to name what's happening. You know, stunning to say something like, oh, so this seems to me like you're at a crossroads. Or if I was entering a room and people barraged me with a lot of things about my organization, you know, I might say something like, oh, seems like you guys have a lot of things on your mind. I'm wondering how we might figure out what's most important. Oh. And then in the naming, there's also the naming of milestones, naming accomplishments. You know, like, so sometimes people in their distress aren't always tracking everything. So I might use truth in saying, when you and I met 5 days ago, X, Y, Z was on my mind. And it seems to me that today you have a lot more X, Y, Z clarity, peace of mind, or to acknowledge that they've made some choices and they're what they need. You know, the first time I met you were at a crossroads, and today you seem like you've made some solid decisions or set some goals for yourself. And I think it's, in some ways, it's a reflecting back. You know, so the use of truth is a kind of reflect back with these things that I'm talking about. Another part of using truth in chaplaincy is to provide feedback to people about their behavior or their expectations or their situation. So I'll give you a few examples of this. This is to say, so this is the third, you know, time you and I have met. When you've been brought in by the police for the violent behavior at a bar. So, I'm noticing a pattern here, are you? Or, you know, I'm actually, I keep saying hello because I heard out of the up front that you've been really unhappy today, making a lot of requests of the staff. So I want to check in with you and see what's going on, and also let you know that people are kind of running around in circles out there, and if you're not getting what you need, I hope you can be a little more patient. It's not that the staff are watching soap operas and leaving bonbons. But ringing the bell over and over again doesn't really, may not get you what you want. And you can imagine if you were sitting on a hospital bed, that's like feedback that's saying, here's the impact of your behavior. So that's the truth of chaplaincy. Meaning your behavior is describing the impact. I mean, I don't do it when I first meet people, but sometimes it's relevant. Relevant to that, too, is sometimes people have really unrealistic expectations, like that people will come to their room for the minute they request that, or that, you know, I'm going to be, I've had my surgery now, I'm going to get back to running triathlons, you know, in June, you know, in April. And then it's true to say, well, after a procedure, I think it's good to set goals that go about 3 to 4 days in the future, or maybe a week, to take it bit by bit, because there's the ideal recovery process, but then there's what happens, what arises in the end. And I like to adjust to that as it comes, rather than if I set a too big of a goal really far ahead, then I might lose track of what's happening in the present. So how many people set realistic goals? And this is definitely on the directive side of chaplaincy, as compared to more the receptive side, or mode, if you will. You know, there is a receptive mode, remember. Meeting people and understanding who they are and establishing some rapport and doing a needs assessment, that part of your needs assessment might be there's some truth telling to be done with this person on a regular basis because they seem to veer away from it pretty readily. Sometimes this also includes reviewing information with people and seeing what they're actually understanding, and then making corrections. Like people will say, well, I'm leaving here in 2 days. And I might say, frankly, really? I heard five. Maybe we should meet in the middle and go before. And I may have heard from staff, like, this person keeps pushing the envelope and we need some support from the Jennifer and helping them understand and be accurate in their expectations about timing. Sometimes a plan has been made for somebody, and so then I might review that plan with them and see if it matches my understanding of the plan. And if not, then I'll just start with it. And sometimes I decide to not say the truth to them, but to circle back to whoever is working with them on something and say, I discovered they said this, and so I think there's a bit of a mismatch. And so that's true telling with staff, too, is to kind of share information that's really critical. And non-judgmental, to just FYI, something's not matching up here. And then, there's the truth of people's experience and inviting that expression. And this is more the receptive side, perhaps, but nonetheless, to say, what's your day been like? What's on your mind? I understand you just got received some news, or we're all watching the television, seeing something unfold, And what are your thoughts and feelings about X, Y, and Z, or what's going through you right now? So, encouraging people to speak their truth. Tell me what's true for you. And I think in day-to-day living, it's not something we ask one another that often. And I think there's a way a chaplain in any context can be a lightning rod for the truth. Along with a lightning rod for the whole person, including their spirit. Might be more representative for integrity and ethics, like our best selves, so this involves And it's also, I think, why some people don't want to meet with a chaplain, because we do represent truth, reality, integrity, and ethics. Just archetypally, if you will. I hope you know what I mean by that, like the archetype of the wise wizard that knows what's going on. So everybody knows, like, the wizard's here, so we're going to be in the truth of what's happening, because there's no phone in the wall of the wizard's eyes. Okay, I'm just making this up, but it's kind of like, questions or comments, and then I got a few more things on my mind, but or situations that you're thinking of would be great too. Is that to be a question?
Just a recent experience at Santa Clara Valley Medical Center. I walked into one of the patient rooms and started with some basic questions about the patient's health, and starting with like, how are you doing? How are your spirits? And she started talking about something totally random. In other words, I could not understand. It's English, but not make sense of what the sentences mean. The nurse walked in and she kind of gave me a hint that she's out of it. Something along those lines she said. But until then, I couldn't figure out what she was trying to say, what she was expecting me to do. So, again, I'm new to this volunteering as a spiritual care person, but I don't know how to handle it more skillfully. So, yeah.
Well, you could use the truth and say something along the lines of, unfortunately, I'm sorry, I'm not completely under, I'm not following you. I'd like to, but I think we're in a situation here where I can't quite. So just to name your own experience, your own expression, and to acknowledge that that's what's happening for yourself. And then the truth of somebody who has some form of dementia or an altered state is they're in a different reality. So we need to work on accepting that. It can be quite surprising if you don't know ahead of time, though. So I think you handled it fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can also say in that situation, I'm not understanding you, but I'd like to sit here with you and listen to you for a while. But I'm the chaplain, and it's important to me that I meet everybody and have a sense of who they are, and see if there's a way that I can support you while you're in the midst of this crisis of being hospitalized. So I'm going to listen to you for a few moments. So we're not ditching them, because of their altered reality. Or if expressing some care and concern, it could be that the person understands it or may not. I think if there was another family member in the room, they would help me understand the situation, but I think they would also be kind of feel cared for if I said, okay, but I'm going to stay for a while, nonetheless, and make some contact, even if it's not the usual social kind of contact. Are there situations around people's minds relative to this?
I just started volunteering in hospice with Vitas, and I had my first patient visit yesterday. And I'm kind of curious how to respond to the context of a situation. It's like an assisted living facility. My buddy has light dementia, like very light. And bedridden, and the TV's on most of the day. She'll sleep a lot through the day, apparently, but pretty cognizant and with it, very articulate, and can see situations from both sides, like when I was kind of doing the assessment. And this is the truth of my truth, is because it feels, I mean, just to be honest, it feels terrible. Like, you're trapped in this room. Like, can we get you outside? and she was kind of excited for that, but the staff just kind of been questioning them, like, oh no, we can't move her. I'm like, she weighs 70 pounds wet right now. Like, we could get into her wheelchair and like put her outside, but like trapped with the TV on. And that's my reaction to the situation. Like, this feels miserable. Like, the opposite of like how I think we want to be connected with someone. And, is it possible to talk into that situation they're in? I was kind of like dancing around it a little with her, just like, how is this experience for you? And, I'm just trying to figure out how to be a best of service without letting my own prejudices of the situation maybe interfere. I'm not quite sure. I'm still really kind of digesting this initial contact and meeting with her.
Well, it sounds like you gathered a whole bunch of information in just one visit.
I guess I can keep this. Yeah, definitely. And we had a nice long hour and a half conversation and time together.
So you're a beginner. And you have lots of choices, absolutely. I appreciate your perspective on how much this might be your own preference of how you would want to be, in a facility. And it very well may not be that they invite you in because she's not, nobody is attending to you, to her, So I think you're, we have to work on truth telling with some people there around your impression of her spiritual needs. Once you kind of establish some rapport, I think you'll probably be able to do something a little bit different, but it may just take a little time to the staff can kind of trust you or have a sense of who you are. So I think this is me truth telling with you around realistic expectations. That things will unfold, but it'll take a little time. And there is this thing that happens in healthcare facilities where people are what's called barked, It happens a lot for people with some dementia. And it's really unfortunate. And so it's a great opportunity for chaplains to fill in the gap of care, the human warmth and relatedness and attention.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Sure. Congratulations on starting the game.
Thank you.
So one thing that's on my mind right now, is there something else about to lunch with the microphone that I can't write down? No. Okay, thank you. I was thinking about in September in our class, I think we're October. Kim and I said the same thing in different ways. I said, if we get to be prepared to be offended, people are not on their best behavior when they're in crisis. Or you're going to come into contact with people who don't have the same kind of way of being or living in their community. Or some people just have really different views and don't mind filling their room with them. So be prepared to be offended. And then I realized later on that Gil said, do what you can to keep an open heart. Do what you can no matter what. Even if you're at the room with yourself in a situation or flat limits or think you can just not shut anybody out of your heart. So I think we were saying the same thing in two different ways. So I love that's true. It can be said in different ways based on either who the person is or the context or the moment. And I would say, in terms of truth telling with people in our care, the truth is not a club with which to bomb people on the head. Sometimes truth unfolds in its own time. We can note it. We can encourage people to hang in there. We can receive somebody's confession. We can know that there's a need there, but it's not the right time. So, and I think this is congruent with Dharma practice and teachings. Around just orienting ourselves to reality, to the truth of all creation. Often I say to myself, particularly when things are difficult on the inside, things like this, And in chaplaincy, often I will say that to myself, to moderate my own intensity or to manage my own longing for the shared to be in the room, even though it's not an explicit thing. But I've said to people, it seems to me that you're not on the same page and staff. But then that's all I'll say, you know, and then see where that goes. You know, I don't always, and if they're curious, I might say, well, you're talking about bringing them home from the hospital, and my impression is this is where they're going to be dying, and that going home will be more stressful than for that to happen here. I'm going to do all the can of the surrounding people to love and support. And that's the big one for people. So the truth is not a club. And often internally my practice has been that he just to always note, it's like this. My hip hurts, it's like this. I'm home, it's like this. It's like this. You know, I think a crisis brings people to the truth. So often we don't have to underscore it with too much time later. And often, particularly in healthcare, you know, people are in their rooms all along staring at the ceiling, you know, or in home care, they're looking at their room and they're nowhere else perhaps, or people are sleeping on the streets staring into cement. So they're living with the truth a lot, as I think. People are living with the truth a lot. And so as a chaplain, I'm encouraged, I'm curious about that. I'm going to encourage them to tell me what that's like. Is there some comfort that comes to tell, if you will, one story? This is actually a whole approach to spiritual care called sacred narrative. Sacred narrative. And this is used a lot, particularly when people have had a lot of crises. I've been through some really difficult for an extended period of time, and the chaplain will be the recipient of the other person's story. And that in this theory or this approach, to support, to elicit a person to tell their story in detail is in itself a sacred act. When the chaplain is able to receive the story and listen to their way. And this is used particularly when in work with veterans who have a story to tell. As well as people who are in the life when they feel naturally begin to tell others about their lives. So this, if you're interested in this, you can look it up. And it's related to how the chaplain receives the story, and even in the telling that act, you could say, it's a ritual. I think I'm sitting with you. You've been through this experience. And I really want you to tell me the story. I have the time. I'm not going to run out. This is the place. And you know, let's talk about your childhood today. And let's see what we can talk about when you got married. But going back to that diagram here with you and me and us and the context, for somebody to tell their story, you can do what's called a sacred narrative. Thank you. which then becomes a very rewarding act of service. Receiving people's stories of their lives is something that has stayed with me as a gift, really, that I received in my long-term care. I also received a gift of their story, which is a handful of people whose stories are still very much with me. Yeah. Which have been from my early days. Let me see if there's any comments or questions. Associations. Okay, then let's break into groups of two. And you can share some reflections, thoughts, with each other. What has stood out to you? What surprised you? What's challenging? What is affirming of what presented here to you today? What are your follow-up concerns? Let's do that right now. We'll have about 15 minutes.
No, maybe one now.
So in my limited experience as a spiritual care volunteer, I'm experiencing a very wide range of patient situations. And it's almost, I don't know, one of the teachers, you said that it's almost going, doing an improv. So, you know, be ready for some unexpected thing to happen and have the presence to deal with the situation. So that's my observation. And what seemed to be helping me, at least as of now, is my intention to be fully present. And I'm trying to do a little ritual before I go into the hospital. It's something like loving kindness meditation for others. So my intention to be of service and intention to be of deep listening as much as possible. And so far that had been a positive experience for me. So that's what I want to share. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So that's your ritual that you begin with and maybe end with too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Raise your hand, anybody else, if you're like, before you start doing some service work, you do something for yourself. Remind yourself of something or say something out loud or take a moment to just look at your attention. Great.
Actually related to the intention setting when serving. At the hospice that I've begun serving, there's a statue of Virgin Mary, and there's a sign that says, God speaks when there's silence in your heart. And I was like, meditation! So I really appreciate Sri's question before we began, actually, because like in this hospice setting, there are several patients who are not super responsive or able to respond. And when they do react to me, they seem annoyed, but I can't tell if that's just that's their range of ability to respond and I'm reading too much into it. And I felt awkward. It didn't occur to me, that, you know, narrating the awkwardness is perhaps what's sometimes needed. So that the patient, if they can hear me, can realize what I'm feeling. Because I feel like this one-way dialogue is very new to me. And so that was a really useful tool, and I hope to practice it.
And if you were to...
please.
Sometimes it's helpful not to face the person, like, face-to-face. You know, so, like, if there's a chair... I might sit in this chair, but like turn it and look at what they're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
It's a little less of a demanding that may interact.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of a joining in their experience.
Mm.
The healthcare can seem transactional, you know, and the chaplain can be not transactional but something else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to explore. I'm not having a transaction, and this is not a customer service.
What?
And joining people is actually different. Joining people who have limited expression or are living in a different reality, joining them is different than what we're used to in the possible. Speaking of joining, we have a guest appearance. Vanessa, you want to introduce us to your...
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have to say something, Vanessa. tell Vanessa.
Vanessa, please say something so you become bigger in our screen.
Oh, I see. I have to talk.
Yes, you have to talk. Thank you.
This is my cat Zuzu.
Aww.
And he's joining us and making trouble.
Thoughts?
This isn't about truth-taking, but it's one of the adjustments I've had to make because I'm a scout for the chaplains in a hospital. And one of the chaplains, the work seems to be about census-taking, really gathering a lot of facts and... And the other two chaplains that I've shadowed are, I'll just say, more heart-based. Not that the first chaplain doesn't have heart, but it's like, let's get information here. And I really was having a, I was offended, actually. You know, I was having a negative reaction, like, wow, that's not what I want to be doing. And then after a while, I understood the broader context of why the information was important. And I understood that the noting system, the charting that went into the computer, was used for later hospital visits. So it helped me be not so disagreeable about some of what I have to do. So that's a truth from me.
This is just in response to your previous question, Jennifer, about is a truth not always wise? And I think there are some truths that I would call unwise or not necessary. If, for example, there's a patient who has, say, a delusion that is comforting, and if it's presents repetitive trauma to challenge that delusion, and there is no real benefit for doing so. I think just being present and in some cases offering support in that case is better than an absolute truth. So I think there's no one size fits all.
We're breaking at 12:30, yes? Okay. So I can't quite tell if there's more. Why don't you go to the microphone? I said it's not, but I'm just going to pause. Let's see. Is there anything you want to add, Vanessa? From your experience?
Lots of things were just coming up for me when I was listening to everybody's comments. Especially that last point about joining people in their truth. You know, when they're sitting with a patient who would just very vividly describe to me all the other beings that were in the room with us at the time, you know, and angels and other beings and his mother. And you know, what could I, what else to do but, you know, just join him in that story and be curious. And there was no, you know, I could revert to some sense of like, well, you know, this isn't my reality, but it's, you know, absolutely valid, and it was But what I was thinking about in the broader sense, like the questions that I ask myself quite a lot, with, you know, what is it that supports my truth-telling, what supports my coming forward with truth-telling, and what challenge is it? And I think when I really reflected on that during my training, what came up for me was, you know, embedded within my personality, there is a tendency or a sort of sometimes a difficulty in confronting people and therefore confronting difficult situations and naming them sometimes. I like to, you know, I often kind of prefer to remain in the comfort zone. And what I realized was something that was really supportive and a great, like, teaching experience for me was being with angry people. Because when I was with angry people and angry patients, the way in which the temperature rose in the room, it sort of loosened me up and it allowed me to address things. Because the invitation was there from the person already, you know, just in their temper and the way that they were. It allowed me to be able to name things more directly rather than euphemize, which I often found myself up doing. Because the situation demanded it, and often the angry person just really wanted to hear something said straight and loud in certain situations. So as difficult as those moments felt, like in the moment, upon reflection, they really taught me a lot.
Thank you. But that didn't happen the first week you were in.
No.
I think it's something you work up to.
Yeah. I also just one more thing. I just remember one patient who took me for the longest ride, who told me, I came in and he was looking kind of down, and, you know, how are you doing? And he spun me this whole story about how he'd been in prison for years and years. And I think this conversation started me asking about his tattoos, and he said, oh, I got my tattoos in prison. And he told me this such long story, and his wife was in the room, and she was just sort of like this the whole time. And then at one point, you know, several minutes in, they both just burst out laughing. And he said, no, that was all BS. Like, none of that happened. And I've been so sincerely involved in every step and offering empathy and, you know, just being with them. And part of me just wanted to reprimand him. And then, you know, because he just found it very, very funny. Like, let's take the chaplain for a ride, you know. This religious girl that's just entered my room, you know, I don't want her in yet. What's the funniest way I can get rid of her? So that was... But I kept going back to him.
Thank you. That sounds a little rough. But like, it sounds like you handled it well. Well, this brings us to lunchtime. Did you believe in that? Have I got the schedule right?
Yes.
Still free lunch, right? Okay.
Yeah. Yes.
So I'm going to end and turn it over to you to whatever needs to be announced prior to lunch. And then I will rejoin you all after lunch. Thanks, everybody, for your attention and engagement in my presentation on uses of truth in chaplaincy.
Great.
Thank you. I will not be here after lunch, but it's been lovely to join you this morning. And just wonderful to have this little window into the room at IMC and to see everybody in situ, like to see your full selves. It's been very enjoyable. Thank you for having me this morning.
Thank you, Vanessa. Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. And so we'll take lunch now for an hour, start at 1:30. We'll start with announcements. And I just want to give you a heads up that some of you said you were available to go to the prison, Soledad Prison. And the two dates that that people could do it on works. So there were some of you who were for, I think it was May 17th, and the other was June 20th. So I'll come and talk about that when we do announcements, just to get it finalized and tell you what needs to be done. But just kind of giving you a heads up that that's coming.